Hey, hey, this is the Bachelor Masters, and we are once again back to recording early in the morning. And I've only had one cup of coffee, so this could go either way right now.
I thought, Craig, I thought you watched, like, Married with Children in the morning, or what is it that's on? Right? I don't even...
There was a time when Married with Children was on in the mornings, which is a great time to watch Married with Children.
Yeah, I agree.
This is like right up against my sleep time. I woke up, put together a cup of coffee, hit record. Not cool.
Wow.
Daylight saving.
This is my second cup of coffee that I'm on now. Because, I mean, it is 3 hours later here, so.
Well, daylight savings does affect this. We woke up around our 6 a.m., which is okay with me, but I still, it's dark-ish out. You know, it's not dark
outside. I don't like that. Yeah, when we wake up and it's dark outside, it just feels depressing to me.
Oh, no, I love it. It's cozy.
Oh, yeah. Real cozy.
Uh-huh.
Well, we're going to put in some firm rules next season about recording this early.
Let's do it from now on.
No, quite the opposite. Look, we got to get into this episode.
Yeah.
I'm too tired to really know where to begin.
Okay, Craig, we'll take it away. There was a lot of show for, I think, for a little content for us, right?
A lot of show. The 2 hours of, you know, like, after the final rose is its own kind of separate hour, and then there's 2 hours of just the, you know, the final regular episode, where a lot of time for not a lot to happen.
I don't know. I think there's lots to talk about in regards to Matt. He turned into a person who has no emotion and was cold to the women. And did he go on the show?
That's interesting. I want to talk about that, because he was a different guy that walked out. He was a serious, somber man walked out the stage. Yeah,
like after the final rose versus the regular recorded episode? I see that. I think, well, I definitely have heard some rumblings online of seeming that I think he was cold to Michelle. I don't think he was particularly cold to Rachel, given the context, especially.
As a package, he was cold to both, I guess, is what Craig is
saying. Yeah, I guess, like the overall vibe was not his usual, like, rubbing their legs as they're sitting on the couch together, smiling at them kind of vibe. Yeah, I mean, especially the thing, I don't know, like, if we want to do this in a specific order or anything, but yeah, when Michelle is on after the final rose and she says she asked Matt to talk to her for 2 minutes after the breakup to get closure and he refused to do it. It was like, Matt, oof.
I kind of wonder how serious they told Matt that was, because I can imagine them going, oh, you know what? Like, you know, kind of not letting it happen. Or maybe I don't know why I want to give him the benefit of the doubt so much, but I also kind of think that, Craig, you're a man. Don't men just want to cut it off and no more? Like, I don't want to talk to you. Why drag that out? What are you trying to do?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, but I think a lot of men are like that. They just want to go, like, you know, lop goodbye forever, never see you again.
He forgot what show he was on. And he, as his excuse, he used this, I don't want to do the easy thing, which is to propose. That makes no sense.
Oh.
Yeah. So if we're talking about just the, you know, leaving aside after the final rose for now, I was a little confused by, so Matt's kind of sudden about face, where he goes from saying his wife's in the room, he is so ready for marriage and a life together, to then he says what his mom said to him apparently made him be like, he recalls it like new information. And I'm like, this is weird to me, because what his mom said was basically like, long-term relationships and marriage are hard work, and love isn't the only component to making that work.
And it completely derailed him.
Yeah, and I was like, is it really what she said? Because that didn't seem that wild to me. That seemed like a very common sense thing to say, right? To be like, you can be in love all you want. Sometimes being in love with somebody isn't enough to make a relationship work.
It's like, get over your mommy issues and your daddy issues and propose.
Oh boy. Yeah, he's got so many dad issues happening here. And I was confused about how her single comment that did not seem that over the top, or you know what I mean? It wasn't like, don't get married to these women, you know what I mean? Like it was very, very normal seeming to me to be like, remember, commitment can be difficult.
Yeah.
And his sort of reaction was to spiral out and be like, oh no, maybe I shouldn't get married. And similarly, that thing when when he's looking at the diamond ring and he's like, this represents what my father couldn't give my mother. And it was like, whoa, boy, that's not what that means.
Yeah. Actually, you know what those diamonds represent is child slave labor in certain parts of Africa.
Yeah. His reading on it was very like, he has a lot of issues surrounding commitment and relationships that needed to be sorted out if that's what he's actually thinking when he looks at an engagement ring.
So there you go, like, EZR.
Well, enough
reasons right there not to like Matt James.
Well, Matt, I think, was saying the process is too quick for him. I don't think that's unfair to say. It's too quick for anybody.
A reality show that takes 10 weeks to find love from 30 women is too quick for him? Yeah, probably.
That's why most couples aren't together that supposedly, you know, end up together. Right? They have like a horrible track record.
JoJo's still together.
One.
Zach and Tayshia are still together.
Yes, got together.
Although again, that literally just happened, so
I mean, give it some time to let it break up. Yeah, there's pretty true then, right? It's hard for him. Like, it sounds like he might have promised the producers he'd get there, and then he used the commitment issues based on the mom and dad thing to deal with what he's really dealing with, to like brush aside, you know, oh, it's because my mom and dad. But I feel like that happened a lot. He said it was one thing when it was really another thing, because it was just an easy talking point to use. So I don't think it's unfair. Plenty of men on The Bachelor who are leads do not end up in a proposal. Isn't that right? Like Colton didn't, Pilot Pete, kind of, you know, they all kind of have a way to get out of it.
He sort of did, but
too much. Yeah.
It was a weird one. I think I have no problem with him not proposing, because I think it makes more sense for a lot of these people to simply say, you know, I'm choosing a person to continue to date, not necessarily to put a ring on this second because of the quickness of the whole thing. And in a lot of ways, I'm like, well, it's better for all of us, the audience, that you didn't propose to Rachel. Like, I'm glad you did. But I can see why people said it, you know, it sort of seemed like a U-turn from being like, I'm totally getting married. In fact, having talked to my dad makes me more ready for commitment. And then like suddenly being like, actually, I am not. And I think, like, I don't really have a problem with the no engagement and with the sort of commitment issues of the short timeline. I think where it becomes sort of weird is that this all happened in the space of like one episode versus being built up a little bit more.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's my input right there.
I mean,
exactly.
You know, it's easy to idealize that you are going to get married and that it's happy and fun and exciting. And then when it comes down to the want, you know, you're narrowing it down, and then you get, I can see that. I don't know. Every season with
that's
men.
That's like going
the
on
is the lead.
Dating naked and getting upset halfway through that you're naked.
Yeah. Yes. I can see all these things being upsetting. You're like, wait a minute. No, I don't want to. You know, I don't think he's not the first male lead who has changed his mind. And given the Bachelor's track record, I don't think it's the worst. He decided to backtrack and he blamed something that is partially responsible. Like, I don't think he has a good example, but he put too much on it just to make the audience grasp onto something.
By the way,
and in that way, he might have used his dad. Really? Never seen it. Is it a British show? Or is it?
No, it was an American version? It was here. It was only on for a couple seasons, but it was pretty fun. Okay. Look,
Craig, do you like Temptation Island?
I tried to watch the American version and I couldn't get through like the first episode.
Blah blah blah.
I tried to watch the first episode and I didn't like it.
I have a question for you.
What?
Was it a good thing or bad thing that they chose a lead not from a previous season? In conclusion of the season. It was a good thing.
It's a good thing. Yeah, it's fine. I'm fine with that. He,
because he would have had much more of like a, you know, a jogging start. He would have already been like, he would have already been one season into thinking he was going to get married.
Well, we're going to get that because we got Katie and Michelle in the next two seasons of Bachelorette. So we get all the running starts we need. But no, that has nothing to do with it. His mom held way too much importance in his decision making, and his dad, he needs years of therapy to get over that. And we just watched him go from 60 to zero in a matter of minutes because his dad couldn't commit and he thinks he's like his dad and he thinks the easy thing is to not propose. No. Actually, that wouldn't be the easy thing to do. The easy thing would be to not propose so that you're not engaged so you can break out of the relationship at the soonest chance you get. He's an F-boy who realized he was an F-boy late in the season, just wanted to F around with Rachel, and he got what he wanted. He got exactly what he wanted.
There. So you think it's like... ending in like a let's continue dating is a waste of time for us. We need to see like commitment.
If we're going to go through all this and watch a reality TV show where they pretend that it's all about love and you get 10 weeks to make it through and give a proposal with a crappy blood diamond Neil Lane ring. And yeah, you know what? You're going to propose.
You're going to make him.
Yes.
Well, you know, one thing that stood out to me is, so Matt's brother, John, mentions, I think it's to Michelle when she's meeting the family, that Matt has never brought home a girlfriend to meet him before. He's never met anyone Matt's dated. And to me, that said, Matt is, what, 28 years old. The only reason you bring somebody home to meet is if you're serious. So... what that indicated to me is that Matt has never been in a really serious relationship before.
Well, Matt, right? He said
I've never been
in
love.
And that might play very substantially into why he was so freaked out at engagement, right? That, like, he's never been in a situation where that even seemed remotely on the table before. And perhaps when searching for new bachelors in the future, that's one thing they might want to consider is, like, yeah, it's not just age that makes you ready for a relationship. It's also having had experience and really, you know, feeling like you know what a commitment is and what it would look like and all that kind of stuff. Like, it seemed very much that he was drawn into the fairy tale of the show. Then it started happening. And the closer he got to the end, it was just like, I don't know if I'm ready to get married.
Well, guess what, guys? Now the door's open for Heather. It could happen.
Finally. The couple we've been looking for.
Okay, let's go with the Michelle the Michelle stuff, like the show stuff. Michelle said something that they just ended in January. That means it's like barely a year fresh or months. She had a relationship that ended in, quote, January 2019, 2020, 2021.
It must have been 2020.
Yeah, because 2021 wouldn't make sense with when they filmed the show. It would have been 2020. She did say it might have been 2020,
but
I think.
But then she came late, you know, to the to the whole season.
I mean, I guess that's possible, but I feel like with the quarantining and stuff, I don't know. But yeah, my sense is she also said about that relationship, it should have ended a lot sooner. Do you think that that's the bad breakup that she and her family were talking about on Hometowns?
Yes, and even though you say it should have ended a lot sooner, that doesn't mean that you really feel that way. That was a bad breakup for her, and she just got out of it. I mean, unless it was 2019, 2020, even 2020, that'd be rough. I don't know. That'd be rough. So she's a bachelorette. That's interesting. But when I heard January, I was like, oh, you could have said pretty much any other date, and I would have assumed a longer amount of time. But January felt so close. Especially January of a year in lockdown. I was, oh no. You know, it's sad. Women do this. They have to go on, like, do something fun to get over their last relationship. And I feel like she'll talk about it, I guess, on her season, which is exciting, right? Because I want to hear about this breakup. But
yeah, the mysterious hard time that they wouldn't elaborate on during the hometowns. I bet we're going to finally get some of the story now.
Yeah. Yippee. So that's exciting. I'm excited because it seems like she doesn't want to talk about it, but she's going to have to.
Uh-huh.
So nothing better than that to me. Craig, Matt's mom was losing it every second.
Matt's mom is a terrible person. There, I just said it.
Why?
First of all, she can't hold back her blush brush. And not put
Craig,
so
I mean,
much
it's a little bit
on.
Of a stretch to say they wear incredibly heavy and unflattering makeup equals a bad person. Like, that's, I don't think those are connected.
Okay. The reason she liked Rachel more than Michelle is because Rachel cried. There you go. That's proof.
I honestly thought she didn't really like either of them.
I didn't think she cared. I couldn't tell.
It's because she didn't want to give up Matt.
I think you're getting to something there. Did you notice? Because I absolutely wrote a note about this. It's on Michelle's meeting the parents date. When Matt is talking to his mom one-on-one, and I'm guessing this is probably when Michelle was talking to his brother in the other room, that they're sitting on a couch together talking, and Matt strokes his mom's knee/leg area in exactly the same way he does to the women. You know what I mean? Like, he loves a leg grab and stroke on the women on this season. You saw it all the time. And then he does it to his mom. And I was like, oh, Matt, no. You don't touch your mom's knee. Just don't.
No, it's out of the movie Psycho, where the mom is a skeleton living in the attic. Sorry, spoiler alert.
Basement. Yeah, well,
spoiler alert.
Because the mom, she could die and be dead for 2 months, and you still wouldn't notice any difference.
Oh my gosh. Craig, I didn't think you were going that there with that.
Wow, Craig.
I'm kind of there with you, Craig, actually, but I want to get to the mom a little bit and after the final rose. How about this? I have something to say about the hosts, and then we could get into the bigger
hosts
stuff. Well, yeah, Caitlin Bristowe and Tayshia Adams was the host.
No, wait, you're pushing all, turning all of this around.
Yeah, I want to get that out of the way, but okay, we'll get to it.
So what are we talking about? Are we talking about Matt James, or are we talking about the mom?
We should talk about the mom and Matt and the family time that happens at the beginning of the episode.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
Yeah. I thought, well, I had a terrible joke that I wrote down in my notes as I was watching this, so I feel like I should tell it. this was when Michelle was meeting the family, and Matt says, I think it's maybe in a voiceover, and he says, you know, it's a celebration of their relationship and their love, this meeting. When he said it was a celebration, I immediately thought back to his dad conversation, where he was like, this is not a celebration, right? Because his dad was under the impression that he was there to be like, cool, good job, man. Check out this right. dating show stuff. And he was like, it's not a celebration. If it was a celebration, we'd be going to Chuck E. Cheese. So I immediately thought, like, well, this is a celebration, so I guess they are going to Chuck E. Cheese right now. But I told you it was a bad joke.
I mean, where's the joke?
that they're going to Chuck E. Cheese because it's a celebration.
Oh, okay. It's funny. I'm laughing.
Wow.
I think it just shows that Matt really has no grasp of what's going on here. He's using the same talking points in reverse, one with his dad and one with his mom. Mm-hmm. He only has basically five things that he says. And then he just says those five things over and over in different contexts.
Well, doesn't that signify to you that he has a lot more brewing, but that's all he can say because he has no idea how to, like, you can't really introduce complicated topics on The Bachelor. You have to kind of stick to the same thing so that you follow the narrative that they are already, you know, they're providing the pathway. You just have to insert your narrative in there.
Okay, yeah, sure. But does that explain why he went completely silent during after the final rose?
Listen, yeah. Craig, we're going to get to that. But that complete silence, I feel was warranted.
There's like eight
actually.
Things we're going to completely get to.
So. Listen, we're going to save after the final rose for after we've talked about the episode a little bit. Just to set up what actually happened before we get to the aftermath, you know?
All right. Yes. All right. So what can we completely get to right now?
That's true. So Michelle, mm-hmm. I'm done with that. They broke up, and it was that's when he turned the corner to me, Craig. Like, after that breakup or during that breakup is when he went from happy fun season to, like, that's it. It's over. No more happy Matt. And the rest of the hour and a half was, like, sad Matt, right? Like, there was no...
Yeah.
Even during the proposal, he was not... It was not an exciting, fun proposal. I didn't see anything... I didn't see the fun, like, Matt after that. Or the, like, Peloton Matt.
Yeah, I think you're right. That breakup with Michelle was so uncomfortable because of the fact, you know, the day before or whatever, she meets the family. It seems like it went well, that meeting, right? Like, the brother says, like, in a to-camera thing that he's gonna, like, really grill her and go hard on her, but he absolutely does not really grill her. Like, basically she says, like, an answer to one question. He's like, I've warmed up now. You seem cool, yeah. You know? So, like, they seemed like they liked her, or at least liked her well enough that it seemed like it went well. And then you go to their last alone date and he's acting totally normally. Like, he's not giving off hints to her that he's having doubts about proposing to anyone or that it's not her at the end. He's seeming very normal up until they sit down in the evening portion. And it's after she's given him that gift of their matching basketball jerseys. And I'm just like, Matt, why did you do this the way you did? If you were, like, feeling this whole date, he must have been feeling he's breaking up with Michelle. He could have done it before the gift. He could have done it, you know, right after their repelling. He could have done it before the repelling. He made her rappel down the side of a building for no reason.
They had to find the tallest building in, like, you know, in Amish country. So I don't know. What, you know.
It's just
some of those
weird.
Barns get pretty tall.
But you can't, they're not sturdy enough. They're not built to code. They were built like 200 years ago. Yeah. The gifts, Craig, the gifts.
Yeah, the basketball jerseys.
Oh, I thought you had something to, you tweeted about it. I thought you had something to say about it.
Oh, just said he wasn't into him. Because,
yeah,
as I said, there's nothing worse than when you're on a date with a woman and she doesn't want to be on the date. Like, she's...
Yeah.
Like, it's the that worst feeling. Matt. Goes both ways, yeah.
Yeah.
So...
Well, then they broke up and he had a complete breakdown, and then we find out later did not want to talk to her afterwards. And then the next day he bails on Rachel's date. Now, as someone whose love language is as someone whose love language is quality time, that to me would really piss me off. Because it's like, it doesn't matter that he proposed after, he didn't propose after that, but that he chose her, gave her the final rose. But he, like, left her, like, she was getting ready, and then she, there's nothing else she could do, right, in that time. She's on The Bachelor. She has to just waste the day.
Yeah.
Well, she was all
done. She's already, like, dressed and her makeup done, and then Chris Harrison is at the door telling her there won't be a date. Was like, that part felt rude to me, right? Yeah. like you send so Chris Harrison to basically be like, I don't want to see you today.
Creepy Matt, creepy Chris Harrison, by the way. Like, why do you have his hand up on the door like he did?
He's being casual, Craig. He's being Jason Kenney catalog.
Creeper.
Well, yeah, that whole thing was very, like, it felt odd to me. If we believe that what he's doing there is, you know, he ends up choosing Rachel. He gives her the final rose, even though he doesn't propose. But he felt like he either didn't want to see her or he didn't need the time with her, both of which are sort of odd in that circumstance.
Mm-hmm. And the Southern, the thing Rachel kept referring to, which I've been talking about all season long, is kind of that transactional relationship, the process, or rather the Southern process. She kind of says, you know, first we got to do this, and then we got to do this, then we can be engaged finally. And then, you know, like, she has this whole layout that's to her. And the whole time she's so weirdly pessimistic. She's like, I'm going to go to get rejected by everybody, because it's kind of her, like, process of getting engaged. It sounds like, you know, you have to act like it's not going to happen so that it happens.
Mm-hmm.
It was really strange. And again, now that I've put myself in the position of, like, there has to be this deal made, like, at a county fair, you know, I'll give you this much for this much, then you, that now I can kind of see why she acts the way she acts, although it is very strange to me. I don't really know Southern, I don't know anyone who's from the South that I can think of. And so it very, like, all I have for references are television. So I had to really understand the process through that lens. And, like, books, of course.
All right,
so
play the process drop.
I believe in the process. I believe in the process.
I'll tell you who believes in the process, though. Michelle and Katie, because they were both kind of like, I love, well, Michelle said this, but Katie agreed with her. She said something like, I love that we get to be in a bubble, just me and the person figuring out whether we're going to end up together, and we will. And that's how I understand it to be. And it works. And who has it worked? Hasn't worked, but yeah, that's true in a way. So, okay.
Well, what about my claim that Matt James is an F boy? He just wants to F around. And...
What do you think about that?
I mean, I don't think it's either entirely accurate or entirely inaccurate. I do think he's not ready to settle down. Doesn't necessarily mean he's an F boy per se, but yeah, I think this was for him and the place that he's at in his life and his emotions and things like that, that this show was a bad choice for him to do, right? That like, he was not going to get a good experience out of this based on who he was going in and how things played out, that I feel like the whole not being ready to get engaged stuff very much harkens back to issues that existed before he became the Bachelor.
Mm-hmm. In conclusion of the season, I think he was a good lead, actually. But I want you guys to, like, think back to the beginning, or to the middle, rather, where there was just way too much intervention. And that was because they didn't trust Matt James. Whether they didn't trust him because they wanted to make him palpable for the general audience, or because they didn't trust him because he's not ready for commitment, I think it was the former rather than the latter.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that he's not ready for commitment, okay, that's an interesting, like, later reveal, you know, burying the lead there. I definitely feel like the producers were very condescending towards him. That's kind of worse than if you're going to have a Black Bachelor, you can't do all the things that they did and then pull out this at the, you know, and then have all the, and then a lot of things broke down along the way anyway, irregardless. Mm-hmm. So, or
yeah,
because of, but not due to. So I can't, like, parse out, Craig, you know, why, whether he was it because of that? Was it because he was putting a lot of blame on his parents' relationship? Is he afraid of commitment? Is he totally, like, manipulated by production and how they made him, like, how they shaped the season? Mm. I can't. It's impossible.
Mm-hmm.
Is it?
Yeah, possible? I would agree that it's sort of hard to... I don't think he was a bad Bachelor to watch overall. But I do think there were lots of things about the way that the show was produced that made it not the best season in a lot of ways, right? Like, especially the stuff that we talked about around the middle, where it was just like, just bring in new women constantly and have the women fighting all the time. You know, it's like, doesn't necessarily make for enjoyable or good TV, even though the producers seem to think it does. But yeah, one thing that jumped out to me too is he, in this episode, right, at this point in time, he'd already told Chris Harrison in basically exactly as many words that he wasn't going to propose to either of the women, no matter yeah. what.
Chris Harrison yet, didn't like that.
Chris Harrison didn't like that at all. Chris Harrison looked pissed. Yet they send Neil Lane to his room anyway, because I guess contractually or something, Neil Lane has to be able to show his rings on air. But, like, that whole scene was so weird because it's like he has just said he's not proposing. And then there's, like, a knock on his door and it's like, hello, I'm Neil Lane. Let's talk about diamonds together. Yeah. I know you just said you're not ready for marriage, but take a look at this case of rings. You know? Yeah.
And then he keeps the ring. That was my favorite part of the episode. Like, I'm going to keep it in my pocket just in case.
And I think he did that because, what?
Oh, no, then he's like, I'm like, why is he running with it? Like,
you know, oh, yeah, I think he was running with it because the producers probably implied to him that he had to, right? But, like, because if he knows he's not going to propose, and it seems like he certainly did, but they're telling him, like, Neil Lane has to be on the show. You have to talk about and show the rings. You can't just turn them down, so you just have to choose one and be like, maybe, I don't know, could come up. Although it did also crack me up that, like, the way that they talked about the rings too was just Neil Lane being like,
the
this
pear shape,
yeah, the pear shape, the worst shape, and then Neil Lane says it's the most romantic one and it's his favorite.
I gotta say that, like, Craig, despite all our ethical conversations around this, I kind of don't mind that shape or that look, and I will never wear a ring or wear jewelry at all. I do not wear jewelry, but I kind of don't mind that. I know that's a big Sex and the City thing where you're not supposed to wear hair shape, it but, is. Like,
yeah.
I was kind of like, that looks fine in terms of, like, I don't like... I think what looks outdated is kind of that square diamond look, like totally just it looks like a box on your finger. I don't like that.
Yeah, but I think my reading is that all of Neil Lane's rings are ugly. None of these looked good. So I wouldn't want to wear any of them. But of the ones that they actually showed on the screen, the pear one was not noticeably worse than the other ones. partially because, yeah, the thing they talked about, like, the cushion cut one is that weird, like, square but kind of rounded off thing. And they showed that one, too. And I was like, that's hideous. So
that looks very 80s to me, like, in a bad way. So I kind of am like, this is, that one's way worse. If Carrie would have opened that box when she found Aiden was going to propose to her and had seen its square ring, then I would have been like, yes, I'm with you there, Carrie. But when she saw what she saw, I was kind of like, what a brat. Carrie Bradshaw, kind of a brat.
I mean, she was a brat in the whole.
I know.
Yeah. It's the premise of the show.
The whole premise, yeah, that she's a spoiled person who, like, writes out of her window and has this humongous apartment. I mean, like, the whole show is ridiculous. What, Craig? What were you going to say?
What? I wasn't going to say anything.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess speaking on the Bachelor franchise, you know, choosing these two women as bachelorettes, when the show is exploitative of the women they choose, it, like, for example, to me, Hannah Brown, it does draw in more viewers, but they do have to manipulate it more, and it does tend to be more entertaining. And I think when it tries to, I think in this case, what they're doing, though, they're trying to cater to women specifically. And it is very hard for them to navigate that because it makes people more mad at production or more mad at the, like, Bachelor machine. I don't think they win either way, but obviously we keep watching. There hasn't been a legitimate boycott that has worked. Well, the thing is, they could finally hit on a boycott that works. Like, people have been saying they will not watch if Chris Harrison doesn't host. Not because they love Chris Harrison, per se, but because they want to make a point about
cancel culture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I'm wondering
how they're going to navigate. I don't want to watch with Chris Harrison because he's not good at this.
Yeah. I mean, seeing another guy in there doing the hosting is like, this is what we're missing.
Yeah, well, I felt very much like
so weird.
It felt normal to me. It felt like it was somebody, like, it was like, oh, this host role is interchangeable because Emmanuel Acho can do this just as well as Chris Harrison can.
Better.
Yeah, like, it didn't, to me, I wasn't like, wow, this is so different. It was like, there were certain aspects where I was like, Chris couldn't have done this particular thing. When he and Matt were having the one-on-one about being, like, black men in America, it's like, you know, Chris can't have that conversation. Mm-hmm. But particularly the stuff with Matt and Rachel, towards the end of after the final rose, like, that felt classic Chris Harrison to me, but coming out of Emmanuel Acho's mouth, if that makes sense. Like, he was being a company man there when he would say some of the stuff about, like, what about some people claiming you never truly loved Rachel if you broke up with her over racism? And it's like, oh, that's a line that the producers wanted you to say. They wanted you to ask that question.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'm not trying to defend Chris Harrison here. I just think that he, it's a big commitment to be the host of this show. And I think you do have to have some kind of, like, remember when JoJo stepped in during Tayshia's season? That was awkward and weird and not good because you need a lot of, you need to feel committed to it. It's part of the, like, theme of the show, commitment. So I people stepping in randomly is going to be awkward, I think.
Are we moving on to?
There's not breaks. Oh,
the point
I kind
our
of
show
it, well,
where we talk about.
Let me tell you why I want to move on to this. So, Chris Harrison is still getting paid. So, I don't understand the one foot in, one foot out the franchise is doing right now. This is not a cancellation or accountability based on one interview, one comment. It, to us, I think, Craig, especially us longtime viewers, it's a long overdue reckoning with how he's acted for 20 years, right? Is that right?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it's symbolic of who he is. He's been biased against a lot of people, and they all happen to be of different races, right? So I'm saying Chris Harrison is still getting paid because he did this voiceover.
Later tonight, Emmanuel Acho dives into the shocking conclusion to Matt's journey.
They let him
do that. Yeah, that was so odd to me that they had him still doing, like, the voiceovers and the interstitial stuff. That was weirder to me than the fact that there was a different host.
So, they can't really, they're playing both sides of, like, well, I'm sure they're telling him, you'll be back. Don't worry, you'll be back. But why even address it? If they don't want to let him go, you know, they're just waiting for the outrage machine to move on to the next thing. But Bachelor fans are pretty committed, so I don't understand quite their reasoning. Like, what they could have done, I think, yeah, if Rachel hadn't been the final Rose girl, it would have been different. If, you know, he was defending the outcome of the show in a way, I can see that. But it didn't come off well, and he was condescending and all this stuff. So it was very strange that they're deciding to address this and keep Chris Harrison on.
I thought we were going to talk about his replacements.
Go ahead.
I got nothing to say.
I just thought Caitlin Bristow was Caitlin Bristow and Tayshia Adams are going to host The Bachelorette 2 seasons, and there's going to be a Bachelor in Paradise in there somewhere, right, Craig?
Yeah, is that what you understand? I think we're going to have Bachelorette, Bachelor in Paradise, Bachelorette.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I thought, I had understood that Caitlin Bristow was kind of persona non grata with the Bachelor franchise because of some stuff she did after. Is that right or no? Like, they didn't want her on Dancing with the Stars right after, although recently she was on and she won. I'm just confused. I thought she was kind of out of their producer picks.
I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's all. Anything else, Caitlin? Because I don't know if you did not see Caitlin's season. Caitlin, you did not see Caitlin Bristow's season. Spelled differently.
No, I saw the goat.
Goats. I was going to say, yeah, was there a
goat?
I don't know.
Yeah, I saw the goat clips of it.
Okay.
And that felt very much like she was in the family of the Bachelor producers, because when they showed her season, you know, they have her back on to talk about it. And that's when she's back talking to Chris about, like, you know, what's changed for her since then and her feelings on the season and all that kind of stuff, is when they announced that she was going on Dancing with the Stars. And it was like a fun surprise that Caitlin didn't know was coming. So I thought that they very much seemed chummy with her.
Okay. I think there was a time when it was not, they were not friends, friendly production and Caitlin Bristow, but I don't know. I don't know why. I think I've heard that for so long that I didn't understand why.
I mean, do you think it's weird to have Tayshia be a co-host so soon after she was the lead?
Yeah, I think having ex leads as hosts is weird.
Yeah.
Have an actual host do it. There are hosts out there that need work.
Well, we saw one last night.
Yeah, we did. Well, what they're doing with the co-hosting with Caitlin and Tayshia, right, is exactly what they're doing with the dual bachelorettes of Katie and Michelle, that they're trying to balance a line here. Of saying, like, oh, look at us, we're not racist, with one black woman and one white woman, we're evening it all out, you know. It's a 50-50 proposition here, and I think their choices make sense in terms of Tayshia's done a little bit of hosting since she was first on the Bachelor on Colton's season, right? So I think that that's a sideline she wants to get into, and I could see her being good at based on, like, her personality on the show. I don't know as much about Caitlin and her hosting past, but it didn't, I was like, the fact that it's so soon is what makes it weird to me. Not necessarily that they would choose Tayshia herself, because it seems like she's probably somebody who would do a good hosting gig.
Right.
I think what they would have wanted is to choose Rachel Lindsay, who has hosting experience and being on the Bachelor Experience and being the Bachelorette Experience, but she doesn't want that gig.
Yeah. It's well, like, the show.
Hosting, being a good host is something you're kind of born with. Like, I don't think any of these people are born with it. I can't think of a, like, can you guys think of a host that had a previous career that's good at it? Remember when they had that Jesse Palmer guy who they're in love with host The Proposal? Remember, Craig?
Yeah. Do He's I horrible. Remember? We were there.
We were there, I know. But, like, he was horrible, and he's still horrible. Now he hosts the Daily Mail TV show, and he's an ex-football player, and it's that is no basis for being a host. And I think there you need this...
I was just going to agree with you, because I was going to say the show would work best when it has a host, not former contestants, because you kind of need a host to host. Like when Chris Harrison walks in or walked in, you know, it was like everyone stopped what they were doing. They listened to him and then he went away. But now we're going to get like, oh, hey, it's our pal Tayshia. It's our friend Caitlin Bristow. It's like there's going to be too much palling around, I think.
Yeah, like, yeah. It's like when parents decide not to parent.
Mm-hmm. And my kid is my best friend.
Don't get me started.
You know who would be a great host for the Bachelor franchise?
Me.
Craig, maybe you could do it. I was going to say Jeff Probst, who is basically the famous version of you.
Yeah. I think famous version of Craig, Jeff Probst would be great. But he's on a different network.
Right.
That's true. He has a gig, but I'm saying Survivor doesn't film all the time. So,
yeah, it's hard because they've turned the hosting on The Bachelor as a form of mentorship, and I think that's where they're coming at with getting those two women to do it. Like, we've been through it and we're successful at it, as in they have a boyfriend. So I don't like that, though. I don't think there's any.
Which is funny to me as the criteria of success, because while Caitlin is in a relationship with a Bachelor person, it's not a person who is on any of her seasons. So it's not like the process worked for her. You can say at this point in time, the process did work for Tayshia.
Yeah. But they're trying to say that Caitlin, you know, she's still in the Bachelor world in that way. And Jason was a minor fan favorite for Becca's season. So, I mean, they consider those Bachelor love stories, by the way, they do. So I don't, whether they're taking credit for them and I'm going to give it to them. Okay, fine. You know, like, I guess they're taking credit for them, for the love stories that come on after, even off air. I don't like the mentorship, big brother, little brother thing they got going. So I do wish there was a host.
Yeah.
Hosty host. Yes. You know, of yore.
Jeff Probst, hosty host.
Well, yeah. It doesn't have to be. the thing is that there is like a gravitas that needs to be had. That doesn't mean it needs to be a white guy, because that's what they're trying to get away from. But they're doing it in the wrong way. You know, let it be someone who is a seasoned professional like that, but they want someone who has climbed the ranks instead of someone who, like,
horizontally. You made your point.
I know, I'm just annoyed because
they're
going in the wrong direction with it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I feel like it would make sense for somebody like Emmanuel Acho could do it as a host, right? But that they didn't maybe want him. I don't know if he would have wanted to do it or not, because they were more interested in the homegrown hosting stuff.
It's the way they think. They're like, oh, let's have Caitlin Bristow and Tayshia do it, because people love seeing they insist upon us that people love seeing past contestants on the show. That's always been a thing.
Do remember when they really wore out Demi's welcome, and now she's on wrestling shows? Like, it's bad.
She's on wrestling shows.
Yeah, she's on WWE.
what?
Yeah.
It's Are you weird. Kidding me?
Nope, I'm not kidding you. It's
how does that annoying. Crossover work? I don't imagine too many WWE fans watching The Bachelor.
It's maybe just they do. They introduced her as someone famous from Bachelor, and after that, she's famous from WWE. Like, there's no real work they
have
to do.
Does she wrestle or is she like a promoter or something?
She's kind of like a story point. Like, she's sitting there and they're like, Demi, what are you doing? You're not supposed to be backstage or something. And then people fight in front of her kind of stuff. Not good. Not good. Bad. Craig, I didn't know you'd be interested. I'll send it to you.
I mean, some of the WWE things are so over the top that I can't help but laugh.
Yeah, it's bad.
Katie's season's going to be filming in Albuquerque, so I wonder if there's going to be any Breaking Bad tie-ins.
Huh. A lot of the group dates are just Breaking Bad themed.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. You can't do Albuquerque without having Breaking
Bad.
It's
true, Craig.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Well, look, as our fans
on TV.
Know that listen to the podcast. I loved Albuquerque the week I spent there, and
the 3 weeks I spent there.
But you didn't do any Breaking Bad stuff. See,
I don't like that show.
See, you can't. The two are so intertwined.
That's not true, though.
You have to
that
do
is
some
not
Breaking
true.
Bad stuff.
That's true to you.
Craig, I feel like that's a you and a Breaking Bad fan thing. I've never seen Breaking Bad, but I have family in Albuquerque, so I've been there and not done anything related to Breaking Bad.
Well, it's still a very cool town, so.
Yeah, it was nice. So I could see, which actually now I like want to text my cousins and aunts and uncles to be like, keep your eye out for Katie's Bachelorette season in Albuquerque.
There you go, yeah.
It's like when people come here, Craig, and they're like, oh, this is that place. And you're like, what? No. Oh, I guess it is, but not to me.
You mean like the exterior shot of Seinfeld in Koreatown that you walk by every couple weeks?
Or when people, one time I was at the, I was with friends of friends and we were walking in Pasadena and they're like, this is from Parks and Rec. And I'm like, what? They're like, yeah, this is where they're the lady from Parks and Rec. I'm like, I've never really seen that show. So to me, I was just walking and they were obsessed with the fact that a lot of Parks and Rec was shot there.
Yeah.
That city hall. Yeah.
Well, that's what makes Breaking Bad so exciting is that they used the fabric of the city, Albuquerque.
That's what I'm trying to tell you is that that's not it to everybody. It's something else to me.
It is
it's like
to
Albuquerque
everybody.
Is something
it's
else
like the number
to.
One show ever.
No. No, I don't know what that means. It was on AMC. I don't think it was the number one show ever.
Okay.
Craig. Okay. After the final rose, I'm ready.
Well, I have nothing to say because Matt had nothing to say.
Oh, okay. Well, then.
Craig, you are so down on Matt.
Yeah. Dude, the guy couldn't even put words together during After the Final Rose. And except for his five phrases that he says over and over. I mean, he repeated himself.
I think that Matt did a good job in his segment that was just him and Emmanuel talking about like the pressures. I thought that was interesting. And he talked well during that. I do think he was, you know, a little cold to Michelle in terms of she brings up the refusing to talk to her thing. And he's like, if only I had known that you really wanted to talk to me. And it's like, well, why else would she have asked nobody, you know?
Right. Like,
why would you ask if you didn't actually want to do it? Seems sort of odd that his defense is he just didn't realize how important it was to her. But I think the thing that most people are talking about in terms of his silence is the conversation with Rachel. And I don't fault him for being silent during a lot of that because it's like, what is he supposed to say at this point? Like, Rachel, I think it's very obvious that she was extremely well prepared and coached by somebody, right? Like, she's probably with a PR professional.
She said, I'm not going to sit here and ... She said that three times.
Yep. But then you look at what she's actually saying and not just like her demeanor and her kind of composure in that sense. And some of the things that she kind of like lets slip, I'm like, oh, this was oof. Like how she says at one point, I think this is before Matt comes out when she's just talking to Emmanuel, that like she had to have Matt explain to her what was bad about her racism in the past, right? And I'm like, yeah, imagine being Matt James and you're dating this woman, and she's just like, why do we even need to talk about this? Why is it a big deal? And it's like, my friend Jocelyn, Bachelor Master super fan Jocelyn, was saying, like, she texted me when she was watching to say, did Matt and Rachel never talk off camera about what it was like to be in an interracial relationship? Because it kind of seems like they didn't. And if so, like, part of that is his fault too, for not having realized that, you know what I mean? Like, that it was odd to me as a person who, like, has dated not white people and is white, and we absolutely have talked about what it's like being in a relationship with each other. So, like, it feels like a natural thing to discuss when you're in a serious long-term relationship, to be like, how does this affect you and how does it affect me, and like, how do people perceive us together and how are we working through all these kinds of things? And yeah, it certainly came across that, like, maybe Matt didn't even see that it would be an issue at all to be like dating a white woman who clearly had absolutely zero background in or interest in really in investigating what it was like to be dating a black man, right? So yeah, that whole thing when she says like she had no idea and he had to explain it to her, but then also it very much seemed like Rachel still did not understand why Matt had broken up with her. That she was sort of in this mode of being like, we're going to get back together, right? And I was like, oh, that's uncomfortable, buddy. Because there were moments during this before his long silence where I was like, I swear to God, if they get back together right now on this couch, I'm turning this off.
Well, I don't know. This is Craig. This reminds me a lot of something you always kind of refer to, which is, you know, when someone loses their like for you and you can tell, it is a hard thing to kind of power through if you have to sit together. And that was what was happening, right? Matt saw her as beautiful or loved her or liked her a lot at one point and now doesn't. And Rachel was reaching out for affection and he, body language and face and everything, just pushed her off and it was bad. Like, it was rough to watch because she was probably used to being told, you're so beautiful, I love you, oh my gosh, we're going to be together. And then all of a sudden, she's not. And I felt like I've told you tons of times that when that happens, it's when someone loses respect for you, which is impossible to gain back no matter how doesn't matter how beautiful you are. You can't get that back through physical means, right?
Yeah.
You are dead to them. And so his coldness was just him deciding she was done. Like, he was done with her. I had so much, I mean, it was really awkward to watch, but it sounded like Matt and Rachel had a lot of conversations where she just let him down time after time and he had had enough. He was done and she still was not done. So what I saw there was that he's defending, he has in the past had to defend racists. And here's where I'm going to get to your mom thing, Craig. I felt like he was kind of talking about his mom when he was saying all the things about how he's had to live there and it's uncomfortable. He doesn't want to, he has to live in the South and it's uncomfortable. He doesn't want to deal with racism and he has to, and it's rough for him. And here's, I guess, a clip that really defined for me how he was talking about Rachel, but he was actually also talking about his mom and how she kind of refuses to maybe acknowledge race.
As someone who grew up in the South, it takes me to a place that I often try not to think about. Events, people, places that I'm not welcome. When she spoke out and publicly acknowledged that she would do better and she apologized, it is when I was finally able to take a check on myself and see where I was at. And I wasn't okay, because it was in that moment and the conversation that I had that Rachel might not understand what it means to be black in America.
So, right. So he lost respect for Rachel, but I think more importantly, he's had to reckon with who his mom is. And I think that is very, very hard for him, as you can see, because he's raised by his mom, and now he's having to deal with that. It's hard for me to read it as like a superficial, you know, 15-week relationship or whatever. I think it's a 28-year thing.
And when did they even get to hang out, though? Because they, you know,
we saw the pictures. Right.
They have to sneak around, right? So how could they be taking pictures out in public?
No, they were not.
They were like in a
pool. Yeah, they get like the happy couple things or whatever. They were staying together at some hotel, I think immediately afterwards for the honeymoon period.
I see. So they either had the whole hotel by themselves, or they made everyone sign NDAs
in order to... You know what, Craig? I think you know this already, but to get kind of photographed by paparazzi, it is not really that bad unless you want it to be.
Right.
I feel like I tell this story all the time, but I have many versions of the story. I just tell the story because it's easier. One time I saw Colin Farrell ride around in circles until the paparazzi like chased him. Like, I see this all the time. They know where to go where the paparazzi are. It's the same thing as we're talking, you know, there's an unspoken deal where like, look, I'm not going to shop at this market. I'm going to shop at this one. So you can take a picture of me because you want to make me look normal. So, you know, stars, they're just like us. Like no one cares that these two are checking in together, except maybe some Bachelor fan there, but they're probably pretty free to go places.
All right.
And yeah.
Okay. Right? So they did hang out and they did have these conversations. All right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They were spending time together, certainly.
Now, there was something there. There was something in there in the host and Matt James's conversation that really, well, it like, it's so true that. I'm not white. I don't present white. And I have to say that this happens to me like every single day now that I live in a gentrified community, is that I am always unconsciously or consciously or half aware that most white people, gentrifiers, will walk down the street. And Matt James was saying he was saying that, you know, he has to present his best self to be the best first Black Bachelor on TV. And I think what he was trying to kind of blanket, and I agree with him, is that when you are presented into white society, you have to present your best self, whether you want to or not, so that people don't generalize you. And that happens to me, and I think a lot of people, every day. Because people will see me as ghetto if I don't go out of my way to make sure that they don't see me that way. And this happened to me, you know, like, and I, this is why I think one of the insidious acts of gentrification is so frustrating to me, is because I live in a 75%, people of color, 25% not people of color, 25% white people. And those 25% of white people make such a more of a bigger difference to how we're living our lives because they go out of their way to, not because we want them to. And I'll give you an example. Yesterday, I joined this group, right? And again, I live in a 75% of people in the community where I live is people of color. This group that is a Facebook group, that it's a local, hyper-local group where we meet, where people meet up and exchange stuff, is, I can say, 75% white. So already there's that, like, this isn't correct. This isn't representational of the community. And I met up outdoors to exchange these things with two other people in the group. They were both white. My thinking as I'm walking towards them is now I have to be on my best behavior. I have to make references that are smart or that are out of my way, above and beyond. I have to code switch. And it's very frustrating to live like that. And I think I've lived like that for so long. I was so bogged down with living like that, that I wanted to move away from Orange County, right? And then Orange County people followed me here. I don't mean that like literally, they didn't literally follow me here, but they, but why am I living around people I don't want to live around? And so I'm frustrated. Like, I can see what he's saying. And I think that people need to be more aware of how much it takes to just show up sometimes. When you are, you know, othered, and that is the insidious kind of like attack that gentrification brings. Now, this is a different conversation than what he's having. He's having a very national conversation, but I think he was referring to just, he said it to Michelle too. He said, you do a lot of work. You do a lot of emotional labor, just daily. So I can't like, I thought that was an important point that was worth kind of exploring a little bit.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Like, when you played the clip of Matt speaking to Emmanuel there, one thing that popped out to me, as you said, you know, it became sort of obvious to him that Rachel didn't understand what it was like to be Black in America, which of course she doesn't. She's like a white woman from Georgia. But I think the real problem is that it's not just that she doesn't understand that, you know, what the Black experience is, it's that she doesn't even recognize that there is a different experience for people who are Black, right? Like, that's the bigger issue. And his silence when they're speaking later, I mean, a lot of that seems to me like, well, of course, obviously, it's another thing that the producers left that in. They could have easily edited that to be shorter. They wanted it to be uncomfortable. But I saw it very much as like he, and he says this too along the lines of saying he doesn't want to be responsible for her tears as she's working through this stuff, is he didn't want to do the emotional labor of having to prep this woman who seemed pretty resistant to understanding that her experience was not the universal experience. Yeah, he just didn't want to be responsible for dealing with that, right? And that's totally fair. Like, that absolutely makes sense as a reason to not want to date somebody.
Okay, so what about his good friend Hannah Brown, who has some of the same background hits as Rachel?
Yeah, ooh. I mean, it's rough because he, like I said, because of the mom thing, he's internalized so much. And I think other than the fact that, you know, he grew up without a stable parental unit, and he has to, like, think about how he deals with relationships. He also has to deeply deal with how his mom, you know, who his mom is. And so I think it's hard for him to, he has to do a lot more work than just the average person's work who has, you know, oh, my parents weren't together. So this is like a back catalog of stuff. It, Hannah Brown included. Tyler Cameron included. Mm-hmm. He was chosen as the bachelor because he was supposed to not have, he's supposed to have been unconscious of those things.
Yeah, that makes total sense to me. I mean, I think there's a big difference between someone like his mom and his relationship with his mom, right? That's his mother, and he's very close to her. In certain ways, he's going to always have to reckon with and feels like he wants to ignore and forgive the stuff she does, right? That's different than somebody you're dating. Dating is optional to him. You know what I mean? Like, your mom relationship is different. That's baked in. It's much longer. It's much easier to kind of excuse certain things when it's your mom versus a romantic partner. And I think it's also similar with your friendships versus a romantic partner, right? Mm-hmm. That, like, you could be friends with somebody like Hannah Brown, who has a similar background and set of, you know, racist past as Rachel, but he doesn't want to date Hannah Brown, maybe. You know, he doesn't want to deal with that. It's different to sort of have a friend than it is to have a partner, right? I think.
All right. That makes sense.
Other than the racial issues, Craig, did it appear to you like the times? Well, here's your chance to give an embarrassing story. He said, like, she tried to hold his hand. He let it go. She tried to stroke his back. He, like, comfortably got out of it. Holy shit. That was
didn't hug her at the end.
Oh, my God. I will tell you. Okay, so I want you to tell me this. Oh, my God. Well, this is the loss of like you're talking about. When you're with someone and all of a sudden they, to you, Craig, to you, they flip the switch. That's your terminology. Yeah. And they're done with you.
Yeah.
Matt flipped the switch and was done with her.
Yeah.
And I will tell you, the moment, two moments, I turned into a puddle of goo, fell off the couch, could not even handle my life anymore. I was like, oh, what is happening here?
Well, Matt, is the door even slightly open?
No!
For relationship reconciliation?
Silence.
Oh, my God! Overnight. Second part.
Well, if you all want to share one final embrace.
No!
Jeez, EZR. Oh, my gosh.
I couldn't deal with it. I was... I can't even tell you like where I started off watching the show, you know, sitting down on a couch with my hand on the handrest, all that stuff, and where I ended up. Like, I was halfway across the room. I couldn't take it. You guys watched that and didn't? Like, I was...
No, the just final embrace thing, I was like, no, Emmanuel, why did you even ask? No.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I
had that happen to me in an airport. I think I've told this story before.
No, go ahead.
Craig, in an airport, somebody came up to you and was like, do you want to share one final embrace?
No, I was dating somebody and I was traveling to the West Coast or something, and she was in the East Coast, and then we lined up our flights back to meet up in Chicago O'Hare. So I flew in early, I flew in a few minutes early, walked to her gate, and she got off the plane. I could tell the second she got off the plane that her switch had flipped. And that was the worst feeling ever, because there's no place to escape to. You have to, like, I had to, like, sit next to her on the airplane.
Wait. You are glossing over the best part. So did you guys, like, sit and, like, drink something? Like, as much as I hate awkward moments, I also relish in them after the fact. So tell us everything.
I can't
drink
I don't
beer.
Have, yeah, something like that. It was totally awkward. It was horrible.
And
I mean,
what
I don't,
did she
I don't
do?
Remember the exact details. Oh. She's like, I just don't think this is working out. I'm like, you could have told me that before I changed my flight around. Yeah. It's like, you just came up with this on the airplane here? She's like, yeah, more or less. I'm sorry I don't have more details. That's what I remember.
I have an embarrassing flipping the switch story I can share if we'd like.
You missed the point of this. Go ahead. I'm still in a goo puddle from that. I can't even listen to it.
Oh, all right, so God. Hopefully this will also give you like a secondhand embarrassment goo puddle. This is, so I was dating somebody in a long-term relationship, right, that we were also long distance. And he came to my house specifically to break up with me, although I did not know that at the time. But that meant he flew here for that. And basically comes in the door and is acting weird pretty much from the jump, right? Like, you could tell the switch was flipped, because it was like, he came in, the first thing he said was, can I use your bathroom? And I was like, oh, okay, sure. You know, like, why would you even need to ask? We've been dating for years at this point, right? Years.
Do you embrace him as he's at the door?
No, there was no embrace at the door. Like, I opened it up.
But normally there is?
Normally when he comes inside, you know, like the door has closed. I have cats. I don't want them running out the front door. So you don't have a elaborate thing as the door is opening. Yeah, like when you step inside. But so like he goes to the bathroom. He comes back out. He never takes off his coat the entire time this conversation is happening, by the way. And he's basically like, hey, can I talk to you about something? And I was like, yeah, sure. And he sits down and he's like, I don't think this is working out. And I guess what he thought would happen is we'd have like a long drawn out discussion over the reasons why. But in my head, you know, when somebody gets to the point of saying like, this isn't working out, we should break up, I'm not going to argue with them. You know, like, I'm not going to fight with you to be like, yeah, please keep dating me. So I was like, all right, well, if that's how you feel, like, that's how you feel. But because he had flown there for this conversation, he has to stay for a few hours before he goes back to the airport catch a return flight.
I think you've told this story before, maybe when you were first on the podcast, because this is coming back to me.
I might have told it to you off air and not on air.
Yeah, maybe. Because I remember he had to hang out for a couple hours before his return.
So he's like just sitting there. And so it was like this whole me being like, do you want some coffee? Or, you know, so I'm like offering him beverages and food. And then there's nothing to do. So I start describing to him the plot of The Bachelor that had aired the week before. and then I show him clips from it. It was so weird. It was such a weird breakup.
But it wasn't like a friendship. Like he couldn't, it wasn't like friendly at it. It wasn't friendship-y at any point. It was just kind of like, you're still here.
I mean, some of it was weird because there was a certain point where it's like, oh, we're just hanging out, I guess. So it feels sort of weirdly friendly. But like, you know what I mean? Like, it was just like, I was mostly doing it to fill the time and space. Like, I was like, you're still in my house. And I'm not just going to sit here totally silently. So instead, I'm just going to talk to you about like The Bachelor.
See, The Bachelor always comes up.
And now, he didn't watch the show at all, by the way. It was just me being like, so this person did X, Y, and Z.
If now, Caitlin, if we were off air and we were in person, I would ask you a lot more personal questions, but I'm not going to do that. But, dear Lord, like I would love to have accidentally come over during that time and been like, hey guys, what you guys up to? Oh, but it's the old boyfriend girlfriend game. Like,
no, oh no. By the way, there was no final embrace as he left. I was like, cool, have a safe flight home.
I love it. I
so what's your story, EZR?
I'm trying to think of one. I'm actually just picturing myself turning off the switch with you, Craig, in like a past life. Like, I'm like, I can see getting uninterested in Craig.
Oh my God.
I didn't want to tell you, but I told you anyway. I'm not messing with you. That's true. But my head just goes straight to TV, like Sex and the City. I'm sure I have a story. Oh, I'll tell you a story. I think I've definitely told you the story before though, Craig.
Okay.
Back in high school, or like right after high school, very cute guy, right? Blah blah blah. We were having so much fun, not dating, but like starting to see if walking down the street, and there was like littered coins on the floor, and he goes, "Wow, coins!" And he just bends down and like starts picking him up, and I'm like, flip switched, that is it, goodbye, never seeing you again.
For me, it would be the expression "wow, coins" more than the act of picking them up, you know.
The emasculating act, and yes, this is very cishet regressive, horrible of me, of emasculating act of bending down and picking up coins just saddened me to my core. Like, I couldn't deal with it. It was over forever. I don't even know what the rest of that day was, but I was like, oops, gone. One time, I got another one. We were at Knott's Berry Farm. And, you know, Knott's Berry Farm is still very kind of almost rural. Like, there's a lot of parts with hay and manure and all this stuff. And there was these, you know, those little tiny, tiny gnats. They were circling above my interest's head. I was like, done. I don't care. I am done. I don't want to see that.
You know, if you think about it, manure is just ma, which isn't bad, and newer, which isn't bad. Yes, so if you think about it, manure is really not that bad.
That is such that's the most horrible, like, line. George, he's saying the word. Like poop is what he was trying to say. Yeah, but anyway.
He was on a date with
Mira Sorvino. What's her name? Marissa Tomei.
Marissa Tomei, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway. I only have like one real fashion thing to talk about. Should we do that?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
Oh.
Okay. Didn't think you guys were going to
ECR is putting in the tape.
Yeah. Excuse me while I flip the side here.
This is the fashion roundup. Craig likes to talk about what people are wearing.
Women, please, can we just stop with the one arm dress?
But that red velvet was luxurious, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it
velvet.
It was a good color on her. I agree. I just don't like the one arm thing. I thought it would have looked a lot better without that arm.
You just don't like that look because I think you commented that about some of Claire really liked to wear the one shoulder dresses, and I think you said that about her too.
Yeah, I just not into it. Not into it.
What's the deal with like men's suits looking way too small?
Oh, do you mean on Emmanuel?
Yes.
I mean, the guy is like ripped to the core.
Yeah, I'm sure. But why wear something like
that? It's also
like
a style thing, I think, right?
It is
they
a style
all,
thing.
They love
That's
the tight
it bothers
suit. Because remember on Hannah Brown's season, how many of those men were wearing like skin tight suits?
Yeah.
But they're skin tight that will cover your very, you know, like manly developed muscles. And then there's ones that just kind of feel like they're stuck on the sides.
think it's just a look and a personal preference thing, I guess. It is something where I'll see it and be like, a little looser feels like it would be more comfortable and look a little better.
Yeah, it look a little better. I mean, that is a side note, but I'm picturing that his like arteries are getting, you know, squeezed. It just looks so... Do you remember, this always comes back to me, that like in the 70s, they used to have to lay down to put on their pants?
Yes, I've heard that.
And so it after the end of the day, you know, your organs, your physical organs are squished. And so you, it's dangerous, everybody.
Yeah. Well, it's things with like tight jeans back in that day. They didn't have like stretchy fabric put into jeans the way they do now, you know, where like...
Right. Right.
Most jeans now have like a little bit of like elastane or lycra or whatever it is to add a small amount of stretch so it's more comfortable and easier to get on. In those days, they just didn't do that. So yeah, it was like literally like pulling on your pants and having like a friend help you into them or something.
Yeah. So yeah, it's rough. I like it, Emmanuel Acho's not flannel, not tweed. I don't know what it is, but that kind of plaid.
Oh, yeah. Like, I think I've been calling it, like, window pane or something. It's like when it's a little crisscrossing things, but it's not plaid.
Right.
I don't know what the exact name for it is, though.
Dang. He could have gotten something. I know that there has to be a middle ground between looking too small and looking too, like, 80s where it covers him. Because it definitely looked fashionable. But it just didn't fit his body type.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's another thing with like super muscular fit men also have an even harder time with the incredibly tight suit look because, they're just like, you're bulging out of it more, right?
Yeah.
I would like to say Matt's mom, one of her outfits was very cute this week.
I didn't even notice. I couldn't even stop staring at her face. You know, she looks. I think I've said this when I think I said this before when she was on a few episodes ago. But she looks like Jigsaw's little puppet guy.
I don't
know. Talking about ECR.
She does. That's adorable. Yeah, the red face makeup. Well, you said Punch and Judy, and I think the Jigsaw puppet guy makes more
Judy.
Sense.
Yeah, I did say Punch and Judy, but yeah. So from the Saw series. There's that little robot that explains.
It's on a little tricycle.
Yeah.
He's so cute.
Like, you must escape from this lock by getting the key from inside the belly of this other person.
Isn't the cutest part that he kind of has, like, you know, no hair at the top of his head? And he's just a cute doll.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the mom.
That is the mom. That's why I kind of was like, I feel bad for her makeup choices.
Yeah, yeah, the makeup choices are unfortunate. But the outfit she wore on the second, like when she met Rachel, I was like, oh, that's a legit cute outfit. It was like kind of an oversized white sweater tucked into a little mini skirt with leggings underneath. And I thought it was cute.
Yeah. Didn't notice.
Easier, I thought you might notice this because it's up your alley of men's fashion choices. But right at the beginning of the episode, they show Matt like lacing up his boots to go outside. And the boots he is lacing up are little brown ankle lace-up boots, kind of like what Peter Pilot wore with his cuffed jeans.
I didn't even notice. That's adorable. That's very adorable.
Yeah, I clocked those boots immediately and was like, oh, ECR would like these boots.
Aw, give Matt James a second chance. Give him another Bachelor season.
Oh, yeah. That's what we
need. I think that's going a little far, but I know he could be on years. Paradise or something. That would be good.
Oh, that's such a step down. I hate when they do that. It just makes me so sad for them. Like, I think Ben Higgins was on Paradise. Is that right, Craig? I don't remember, yeah. But it makes
Nick
me
Bial
sad.
Did it before he was Bachelor,
Nick
right?
Bial is a sleazebag, though. He does everything. And it, for some reason, never sticks to him.
But yeah, Matt had some cute outfits in that episode. A lot of like soft sweaters, wintry clothes. He looked pretty good throughout it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you guys. Okay. Just one thing about the whole night. I thought 90s revival was 10 years ago or maybe even longer than that. But now 90s revival is really full on. But the part down the middle, the blue nail polish is so.
I noticed her blue nail polish is Rachel.
Yeah. Ugh.
Yeah. That was didn't really vibe with her red dress.
Yeah, it was an interesting choice because it didn't feel like it matched the dress at all. It was a different thing.
And it's not 90s blue. It's a very much a matted top, like a Instagram blue, like that kind of wash they give Instagram that's mauve and, you know, light, but
man,
matte. I don't know.
You're really against Instagram.
Well, I think the look is dated without being dated. It just looks like now. And whenever something pulls me out and tells me you are living now, I get like a visceral, like, you know that, I bring this up all the time, but that ugly handwriting that's still somehow in, even though we are in the next decade officially. The like, hello, spring. I see it all the, and it's so now, but also dated to me. That
what
I
if they did the date cards in exactly that kind of right. like script?
Oh, I hate it so much. I hate it especially because it'll have something stupid and not sarcastic, but you know, it'll say something cutesy on it that always really bothers me on a soul level. Like, I don't know what this is, but I see it sometimes. It'll say something like spiritual gangster. And
oh,
I
no.
can't even tell you where that takes me in my head in terms of rage. And like, what does that, why are you saying that? You're obviously not. What do you mean by that? Why are you taking terms? Just everything. Mm-hmm. And then it's in that script. Whew. You know,
yikes.
Kids writing. I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah.
That's what her nail polish brought me to.
Fair enough.
Yeah, it's also an unusual choice because I think most of the women on the recent seasons, when, you know, they have nail polish on, the really popular colors seem to be like a nude color. They all love that. Or sometimes white.
So
white
Rachel.
Nail polish
yeah.
is in too. But having a blue is not super common, actually.
No.
Ugh, yeah. Gross.
Okay. Well, we're long, so let's wrap up.
I mean, I think we've said everything.
We have. We've said everything there is to say. So I guess we're going to be off the air for a little while until they film Katie's season.
What?
So,
Yeah, why were you so upset by these Bachelorette seasons, Craig?
What are you saying what for? Because I...
What are you...
Because I sighed?
Yeah, exasperated about, yes.
Sorry, that was more of a it's early in the morning sigh than any sort of...
All right. I prefer watching The Bachelorette to watching The Bachelor, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah. No, yeah, I don't disagree. But, you know, they got to film the thing, so it's going to be at least, 3 months before the show airs?
I think they said it's airing in the summer, and the Michelles will air in the fall.
So we're not going to be on the podcast. I guess we could do a countdown episode when they announce the men. And so we'll be back. So make sure to subscribe to our podcast. Hit us up on Twitter and Instagram for funny witticisms and memes. And leave us a review on the Apple Podcast app to let us know you're thinking about us, because we'll be thinking about you, dear listeners. We will. I guess that's it.
Yep. Guys, think of more stuff to turn me into a goo pedo. I love these stories.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.